community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
In the studio with me this afternoon, we've actually got Louise McKinley, or should I say Councillor Louise McKinley? Should say it really, shouldn't I?
Same thing, don't worry.
No, but you've got a title. You're supposed to use a title, aren't you? Now, you're the leader of the Conservative group in the area. Is that
That's
right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, you were in charge up until the last election.
Yes.
And now you're not.
Correct.
So what I want to do is find out your opinion. This is just your opinion now on what they're doing and how you would change it. Sounds feasible, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Because there's loads of bits and pieces. I was talking to the guys from the Brentwood Gazette, as I do every Tuesday. They come in and tell us what's coming out. And there's this huge thing, it's been going on for ages, about William Hunter Way, what they should do in the area. Should they make it housing? Should they make it a cinema? I mean, it's just a huge car park at the moment that's sitting there. And it's a huge expanse of area just sitting there with cars on it. What would you actually, what is your opinion of the William Hunter Way thing? What would you do?
Well, obviously we had the William Hunter Way project before, which unfortunately didn't come to fruition as we would have liked it to have done for various reasons. The negotiations, it wasn't in Brentwood's interest that we sign up and see that through. So,
and what was it you were going to do at that particular point?
It was a mixture between retail, cinema, and also some residential use on that site.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
A good use of a central
that
town
centre. Sounds feasible, yeah.
The site. What we announced when the deal fell through before was that we would be going back out to consultation and would be starting the process to make sure that we could come up with a scheme that would be viable and that could be delivered for the benefit of Brentwood.
Okay.
So in that regard, you know, we're obviously pleased to see that this A scheme will, in terms of the work that the coalition are doing at the moment. I think what is of concern, however, is if you look back, you know, come this Wednesday, it's 5 months to the day since the election. And a general theme, really, of which I guess William Hunter Way is just one example, what exactly have they been doing for the last 5 months? Managed to keep it in the press, yes, absolutely. But if you actually break it down in terms of what's been happening, there was an agreement that every household in the borough was going to receive a consultation document. For the beginning of September, there are still a number of households, a number of areas that have not. And despite the council already paying for that to have gone out, they have now decided to take a second bite of the cherry and write to people again at a cost of over £10,000. So they couldn't even get an additional letter out. They couldn't even get the consultation right in the first place.
I mean, we're talking about mail-out costs now.
Yes.
£10,000.
Over £10,000 for this second wave of consultation.
Oh my word.
Was a figure that I've been given. And that obviously wouldn't have had to have been spent if the first bite of the cherry had worked properly. When I inquired as to whether we would actually be paying the full bill, I was told yes, we would be, which, you know, again raises a number of questions which, you know, I have to take up and on top of that, we have a William Hunter Way working group, which involves representatives from every party except the Conservative group, which in Brentwood at the moment means that all of the opposition are excluded from that process. So we were, you know, promised a new administration based on openness and transparency, and nothing will be hidden. But begs the question, well, what's there to hide on this? If there is a process in place that is about a big development in the town centre, which, you know, this clearly would be, then why would you exclude the only opposition group? You know, we've been criticised for not turning up to some of the, what I would call, farcical of standing in a car park or inviting everybody along to the chamber. But I think, you know, quite clearly most people can see that for a multi-million pound development, decisions are not going to be taken standing in the middle of the car park, that there is actually a lot of work that needs to be done in order to make sure that people have all the information to then move ahead. And it just begs the question, you know, where are these conversations taking place?
Yeah.
And what other meetings are happening? And again, I mean, I say, why is it not the case that every single party is represented, and certainly the one and only opposition? Why would you move ahead with a scheme and exclude the only people that effectively could hold the administration to account?
Do you think it's a case of not actually having the money or the full amount of money to do, and they just have to be seen to do something, which is typically governments all over. They have to be seen to do something so that they just keep on pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back until they've got the right amount of money to step in. And if that is the case, if you do think that's going on, surely it would be the same for all parties involved.
No, I don't think it's about money in this case, because it's not about the council paying to have the development built. It would be about the council facilitating the process, making sure that they have decided what the site is going to be used for and going out and getting the private sector to do the build. So in that regard, there isn't the need for the council to have millions and millions of pounds set aside for them to actually fund a scheme. I think what we're seeing here, and again, this is, I think, endemic of the administration at the moment, is that there are so many different factions within it. Yeah. There are so many different parties.
Yeah.
You have a council leader, but you do not have a leader of the administration because there are too many people and too many groups involved. And rather than being focused and knowing what it is that they're going to do, as I say, we're 5 months in, and when we're actually seeing very apart from a weekly wish list, as I put it, of announcement after announcement. So what would I like to see in terms of William Hunter Way? Well, I would definitely like to see my group represented on that working group. I think that's only healthy for a scheme of this size for the borough. It's what we had in place before, where we had opposition members working on it as well. And I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. Yes, absolutely. Let's obviously, we want to see consultation taking place with residents and with local businesses. But let's get it right. And having to spend over £10,000 of taxpayers' money again because it hasn't been done correctly in the first place, it's obvious reasons. But secondly, let's show some real leadership in this and start putting schemes and ideas out there that people can then comment on. Because just having an open book of what do you want, you know, you ask you one thing, you ask me, we're going to come up with different answers. And whilst, yes, that does generate ideas, at the end of the day, if you cannot have the world and his wife putting forward a view left, right and centre and expect to get anything coherent out of it at the end. So, you know, a lot of it will just not be deliverable. And again, you know, if people are furnished with all the facts and figures, they would be able then to be able to see, you know, what it is that is deliverable and what isn't. And that's come forward as a proposal from the administration to put out there to get some feedback from people. So let's stop the PR stunts, the standing in the car park, we're here to listen to everybody, because that's not going to achieve anything. Let's do this properly. Let's put something out there. Let's make an effort to get people to comment on it. But let's make sure that what people are commenting on is something that could actually be delivered.
You touched on the subject that they spent £10,000 on the mail out, which does seem like an awful lot of money. I mean, that's typically a mail out, and you buy a stamp, it costs you compared to what it used to be. So if anybody does the mail out, it's going to cost a lot of money. £10,000 seems an awful lot. Just almost to do on a whim. We don't know whether they did just do it on a whim. But there's a subject of fly tipping that's going on as well. The council are spending, and this is not £10,000, this is a lot more than that, fortunes clearing up other people's rubbish in certain areas. Street corners, near the dump, outside the dump, on the floor of the dump, you know, just... and I heard that they were going to put closed-circuit TV in to try to catch the people that would... And that's more money to be spent. And I just want to know, how would you approach the subject? Because fly tipping in Brentwood at the moment is a huge subject. It's just, it's everywhere. How would you approach this subject, and what would you do to...
It's incredibly difficult, and I think whoever is running the council is always going to find that very challenging in terms of coming up with an answer, because there isn't a simple one. We are fortunate in Brentwood, if you compare us to some of the other areas around us, where we don't have as big a problem as others. That's not to say we don't have a problem, and certainly in some of the rural areas. I mean, Crown Corner has just been closed as a dump site because of fly tipping issues. How do you tackle it? Are you proactive in it, or are you reactive in it? And whilst normally I would always say you should be proactive in life, there are some things where I think you have to be reactive, and if it comes at a cost, both options do, then you have to decide which is the best one. And in the case of fly tipping, I would be pleased to see the administration bring forward some proposals around some CCTV. It has been beneficial in other areas, but as you say, that does come at a price. And in these tough times, we do have to weigh that up. The financial cost versus the impact that it has on some of the more natural and more beautiful areas of the borough. So it's not an easy one to tackle. I'd like to see prosecutions, but again, that's very difficult because to build a case, it's not just about catching people there, which, you know, in itself is one thing, but anything that you can you go through it and help identify who has put it there? And if you can, then yes, of course, we'd always back the council going ahead with the prosecution. But if it's rubble or, you know, I don't know, whatever else people might fly tip, how do you identify that back to the culprit? If you've got a bag full of envelopes with addresses on, it's obviously easier.
Yeah, that's right. It
is very, very difficult.
What amazes me about fly tipping, there's always a fridge, a mattress and an old oil drum. What's going on? Who's holding this stuff and then dumping it? Louise, let's play a song and then we'll come back to you with a few more questions.
Okay, thank you.
Mikey's Drive Time, my Brentwood and Billericay's Phoenix FM with the Eagles and Hotel California with the Kings of Leon and Pyro on the way next. In the studio with me this afternoon, we've got Councillor Louise McKinley. I'll drop the councillor a bit and then you say it, your proper title. You're the leader of the Conservative group in the area. We touched on the last conversation about the council at the moment's wish list. Have you got a wish list of what you would like to do in the area?
Well, we obviously went into the election with a very clear manifesto. I think the manifesto and what we've seen with the current coalition is that we would be delivering on it. And when you look down all the announcements, you know, I have this on ever-growing wish list that we seem to hear every week.
Yeah.
The leader thinks it up over his cornflakes in the morning and it gets announced to the local newspaper
at
lunchtime. But we've had Leverton Hall being used as a drug rehabilitation centre.
Okay.
We've had the so-called Barry's Bikes, which was going to be for councillors and council staff to be cycling to work.
Yeah.
The free food recycling bags. We've had that potholes being filled, money for the Brentwood Centre. None of this has actually been funded in any way. This Wednesday, as I said earlier, will be 5 months to the day since the election, and we haven't seen this clear list of priorities. We haven't seen a new budget come forward.
Hmm.
And without that, how are they funding any of it? So they're nearly halfway through the year. What have they been doing? The answer is not a lot. What would we have done differently? Well, as I say, we would have made sure that we were delivering on it. The local development plan, which outlines growth in Brentwood for the next 15 years, and that's both residential and business, so it's identifying land. That was due to go forward at the end of this year. We're now being told that that's going to be set back 6 months. Begs the question why. I can only assume because they want to make some changes, which in itself is fine.
Yeah.
But what have they done about that in the last 5 months? The answer's nothing.
Yeah.
I had a meeting with the leader where I asked him about the plans around the LDP, and his words to me were, it's open season, protecting only the country parks. So all those other areas which are precious to us who live in Brentwood, it's open season for the developer. That was his phrase. And when pushed on what he meant by that, the growth coming, he didn't elaborate. So again, you know, 5 months in, we've got worrying statements like that. Nothing's happening, and we've got deadlines being pushed back by 6 months plus.
Well, that doesn't bode well for Crossrail that's coming up, does it? I mean, this is another one. This is like the William Hunter Way area. We keep hearing more and more about this Crossrail. I'm a little bit concerned, to be honest, as a Brentwood resident, about the traffic. Because it's not just going to appear and be fine. These things have to be thought about. And if in this is such a good straight line straight into London and Heathrow and Gatwick, and this is going to cause a lot of traffic, and the traffic needs to be parked somewhere. So where's that going to go, do you think?
I couldn't agree with you more. Unfortunately, the coalition appeared to be taking a different line on this. We'd actually set aside an envelope of money of £1.5 million to start looking at where we could provide additional parking, particularly around the Shenfield area.
Hmm.
for the very reasons that you've just laid out there. Now, anybody that is familiar with Shenford already will know that it can be absolute gridlock, not just at the obvious times of day. Park, the taxis bank up a long way, and it can take a long time to get from one end of the Broadway to the other. It's a very busy area.
Very.
Obviously, once Crossrail arrives, you can only expect that to increase. So what are the preparations for that? Well, the money which we'd set aside was to start looking and to have some funding there to be able to provide additional parking. And there are various options around it, and we commissioned a report to start looking at what some of those options could be. The report came back in March, just before the elections, when we then went into purdah, which is when the committees don't sit, so we can't do anything with the... And since then, this report has just died a death. No one's brought it anywhere to any of the committees to look at and to see, you know, what information can be gleaned from it. All they've done is leak certain aspects of it, shall we say, to the press. And despite calls for it to be published, for it to go onto the website, for it to find its way to a committee, they've not done that. So, you know, again, why? But worse than that, The 1.5 million that was set aside, they are now making the case that some of that money should be used elsewhere to fund other pet projects, which leaves the Shenfield Hutton area high and dry, because money to spend on a scheme that to help alleviate some of the parking issues, then I can only see the situation getting worse, not just for those who live there, but also for those that work there and need to pass through and drive through. So my fear is that, you know, they will raid this envelope that has been set aside in good faith, and I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. Whatever scheme somebody comes up with, you know, you need the money there to be able to deliver it.
Yeah.
And if they spend that and on these other fanciful projects, where does that leave the area once Crossrail arrives? I'd say it leaves it in gridlock.
Well, Bob, in raising more revenue to be at the forefront of any council that takes over in Brentwood, and every area, to be honest with you. There were certain rumours that Brentwood was going to charge for nighttime parking. I come from outside the area around about 3 years ago, and the areas that I came from, they always used to charge. It was 24 hours a day. Everybody used to have to pay to park outside their own house, and I don't see any of that in Brentwood. So for me, this is like, oh, this is fantastic around here. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. You walk up to most of the regulated areas, and they give you half an hour free parking. That was unheard of from the...
That was something that we introduced.
Was it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fantastic idea. I think that's a really good idea, because 9 times out of 10, if I need to pop to the doctors to make an appointment, I'm not going to be any more than half an hour. Mm-hmm. You don't want to start putting a pound just because you're going to be there for 10 minutes, quarter of an hour. I think it's a fantastic idea. And that was a breath of fresh air. And I'm not so sure about charging 24 hours a day for parking, though. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's something that you would have done to raise more revenue? Or do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a bad idea, and it's something which certain aspects of the now coalition were certainly advocating when they were in opposition, that were promoting this idea around charging in the evening for some time, and we were against that. And the reasons we were against it were mainly the impact on the local residents. The parking restrictions, those premises that have resident-only parking, that will finish as people are coming in from work. I think in some areas it's 6 o'clock, in other areas it's 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
After which there are no restrictions in those areas. Hmm. If you're charging in the car park, it's normal behaviour, and anybody, whichever town or city you come from, if you can avoid paying to park, you do.
Yeah,
we,
right.
We all do it, of course you do. So if you can park in the side street versus paying your £2 to park in the car park, most people are going to park in the side street. And I just think that is going to make life incredibly difficult for those people who live there, who are then trying to, you know, come home from work at the end of the day and just simply park the car and walk into through their front door. If they can't park, that's going to cause them a lot of frustration and upset, and they'll be parking miles away, etc. And that's without any of the noise that can be associated with, you know, so-called late-night revellers, as they go back to the car, whether that's 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, to go home. That's going to cause disturbance there. So we've been strongly against it. But we looked at it when they first muted it a few years ago, we did look at it, and we did some figures around it, and the cost around having some enforcement, obviously changing all the machines, it's quite significant. So you've actually got to look at what would they be making anyway.
But surely that cost would be brought back over a couple of years, or even 6 months or so, depending on how much they used.
Well, it was estimated, the latest figures that I had, that it would be about 2% of the overall income to the council would come from this nighttime charge. I mean, it's not a
That's
lot.
It's negligible, yeah.
And if you think about the car parks during the day, you know, I might go in and park at 10 o'clock, and at 11 o'clock I leave the same space, and you leave at 11:30, and the next person comes in. The same space is used again and again. So there's a turnover in terms of the revenue that comes in as well.
Yeah.
Whereas in the evening, if you come in and park at 7:30, and whether you're going out for dinner or you're going out for the evening, maybe at a push that space might be used a second time. It's not going to be used 3, 4, 5, 6 times as it would be during the day.
Yeah.
So the idea that when they say that they're going to use that money to reduce the daytime parking charges, certainly when we modelled it before, it just doesn't add up, because it is such a small percentage of the income and of the use of the car park when you look at it on a 24-hour basis. So figures work, but the main point is around the impact that it will have on residents, who already, you know, rightly so, because of course they should be making views known, have concerns and complain about some of the antisocial behaviour associated with living so closely to the high street. And now we're encouraging people to park right outside their front door. I don't think it's good news.
Well, parking's a flashpoint, even without any extra pressure. It's always a flashpoint, especially between neighbours. Oh, you're over my side, and I'm over yours. And I know numerous people that have had huge arguments with very level-headed people, but it's just parking. People would seem to empty their head and just do what they want.
And we all know that many of the houses around the town centre are the older properties, so they don't have all the off-street parking that a new property would have. And in today's day and age, houses have got 2, 3, 4 cars, depending, you know, how old the kids are, etc.
Yeah.
So you've already got real bottlenecks and real pressure on parking.
Yeah.
And now we're going to be, not through intention, but I think the side effect will be that we'll be encouraging more people into those roads, which is just going to make what's already a very difficult situation even worse.
So if you were in power again and you had to raise a certain amount of money, is there something that was at the top of your wish list that you would approach first and foremost?
Well, we were looking at the revenue generating, entrepreneurial, better use of assets, etc.
Yeah.
The concept was agreed right the way across the chamber. I think where the differences come is how you actually achieve that.
Yeah.
And certainly what we'd already started over a year ago were some areas where we could start generating an income and looking at ways in which we could actually get the council more money, but not just through what I call the lazy way, which is increasing the parking charges and putting up council tax. You know, anybody can
easy
do that.
Hits.
It's
yeah.
easy.
Yeah.
And you've got absolutely nothing that the public can do about it. It's easy and it's lazy. Looking at other ways in which you can actually have an income. And we'd started that piece of work, and some of that's gone forward, and the coalition are taking parts of that forward. So just, you know, a couple of small ideas around car washes in the multi-storey, and looking at how we could use some of our staff to actually generate an income through some private work, etc. as well. There's a number of options there. But if you start looking at some of the premises that we own, that's where I think some of the real opportunities lie. But it's about doing things in the right order. And what we started to look at was, well, if we're going to own property and rent it out, not through a sort of a social housing, we already deal with that, but having it completely separate just as a commercial arm, that you need to do your homework and establish what is the best way in which you do that before you decide which properties you're going to acquire, if any. And to look at how that property is going to be managed, what the costs around that will be, what the risks associated with it would be. So, you know, if you own a house and you rent it out, is it going to be occupied 100% of the time? What happens if the tenants don't pay? You know, who picks up the bill, the maintenance, all the things that you or I would think about if we owned another property that you were looking to rent out for somebody to live in.
Yeah.
And that piece of work hasn't been. And this, you know, this is where I take real issue with some of the actions that the coalition have taken, or announcements, should I say, that we're going to acquire 5 properties on the Worley Training Centre. that we're going to convert Old House into residential accommodation. All the business case that was done around Old House before proved that it did not stack up. And I'm not saying that as a politician. That went through all of the finance officers at the council, and the head of the finance department said it just doesn't stack up. Yet we're hearing these announcements again, but we've not seen any new information or anything revised that suggests that that original position was wrong. And I think what they need to do, as I said at the beginning, is stop coming up with all these fanciful announcements just to get the next headline in the local press, and actually start doing their homework and doing things properly. We kick-started that process around looking at what the options are. They should be driving that through and making sure that we would be set up as a council to be able to manage property. We're not just talking one or two. If you're serious about making money, it would be a portfolio. So how would we manage that? What would be the risks? What would be the costs? And if it's decided then that, yes, that is the right thing to do, at that stage we start looking at which property is right, to whether it's to buy it, to build it, or... But obviously doing the homework bit is the non-fancy bit. It's the bit that doesn't get you the headline. It's the bit that...
Yeah, that's the hard work.
Yeah, it's the hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's much easier just to ring up the press and say, look, we're going to buy five houses, or they're going to build five houses.
I can understand you saying, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what we're seeing. So where's the groundwork? Where's the substance? As I say, let's put the PR bit to one side and get on and actually do the work.
I must admit, I do like the idea of the council actually going into business, to be honest with you, for want of a better word, rather than just picking the easy pickings. Rather than making the taxpayer just pay more tax in any way, shape or form that they can, start a business. Because that's essentially, ever since the smoking ban came in, you step forward because there's less tax being paid on the cigarettes, because there's less people smoking, therefore the higher governments can't pass down as much money to the lower government. And, you know, it's always the taxpayer that gets it in the ear, and especially the motorist as well. So I like the idea of the business aspect of it, to be honest with you. I know they do that to a certain extent at the moment, but I do prefer that.
I'd agree, and I think, you know, if you look at sort of our track record over the last 5 years, despite falling grants from the government, you know, we're all aware of austerity and the need for that, but we've seen like 40% cuts in the money that we get from central government here in Brentwood, yet we have still managed to not only maintain... When we were running the council, we did increase the services as well, cleaning the streets more, providing more recycling opportunities, and we did that whilst cutting the council tax, and we did that to the equivalent of 16%. We've also, as I mentioned earlier, introduced the 30 minutes free parking, and we reduced the cost of the 2-hour parking charge, which from the figures that we had means that parking is now cheaper for around 80% of people who use the car parks, because most people only park for up to 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it is possible. You know, I think you're absolutely right. And as I said, I think it's lazy politics when you just hike the council tax or, you know, just put up the parking that people have no control and no say over. Because if the council want to go and charge, you know, an extra 2-3%, whatever it is, on your council tax,
you're stuck.
You have
it?
To pay it. You can't.
Well, you can try, but
you won't get very far.
No, nobody ever does.
Vote with your feet at the next election, but it is the lazy approach to it. So we have proven that there are better ways of doing it.
Well, there was a. I'm going to play one more song now, but I want to talk to you in a second about leisure time in Brentwood, because I heard reports that they were thinking about moving. Most of the pubs and clubs out of the high street, or there was an idea to move them out of the high street, put it into a leisure park itself. I'm going to play Kings of Leon, and I'll be back with that question in just a second. Mikey's Drive Time on Brentwood and Billericay's Phoenix FM, with Kings of Leon and Pyro on the raid. On the way next, we've got Rogue Traders and Watching You. In the studio with me this afternoon, we've got the councillor Louise McKinley, the leader of the Conservatives group. And I left you with a bit of a quandary. I've been hearing rumours that they're a leisure area, shall we say, around the Brentwood centre area. The whole idea is to bring the nightclubs and possibly the cinema that was supposed to be built in William Hunter Way out and put it in its own area. with an in and an out from the A12, a direct route. Now, on the surface, that seems like a fantastic idea, but...
The devil's in the detail.
Yes, obviously increased traffic, increased parking, which, as you've just touched on, you always park where they're not supposed to park because it's cheaper to park in a side street. What is your opinion on something like this? Would it work? How much would it cost? And where would they get the money from?
All very good questions. I think the first thing to point out is that the licensed establishments that are in the high street now obviously have a license, and you can't just force them out and say, you know, you're upping routes and you're moving down the road. So there is this question, I guess, around whether it would work in that regard. Secondly, the experts, the so-called experts in terms of town centre planning and making sure that you have vibrant town centres, are generally of the opinion that these out-of-town centres cause problems to your existing retailers and the knock-on effect from that. And that's not to say that there aren't some issues in the high street at the moment, which I think are probably well documented and which we would all want to see improved. But one of the benefits around having a healthy town centre is the knock-on effect to the other businesses. So, you know, you may have people visiting Brentwood who will use the hairdressers to get their hair done. They will go out for dinner in the evening. They will then go on to a bar, a nightclub, whatever. And that will affect the local economy. Just moving it out here, very difficult to achieve in the first place. I mean, we're obviously sat here at the Brentwood Leisure Trust, which is surrounded by Greenbelt. So that's your first quandary. But secondly, what impact would that therefore have on the local high street? If those pubs and licensed establishments did come out here, what's going to happen to the units that they're in? There are, you know, already some units there which are empty and have been empty for a while. Albeit that I do think that through the economic downturn, Brentwood's actually fared very well if you compare it nationally. We always talk about that, I think, has undoubtedly helped keep the town centre going, whatever your views on the show. It has helped keep local businesses going, and particularly some of the independents, which I, you know, has got to be welcomed. Nobody wants to see a high street full of boarded up shops.
No, not at all.
But equally, there are other units which have not been let for a very long time, or in some cases in the Baytree Centre, ever. So if you start, therefore, bringing more out here, what happens to those, you know, where the bars and the restaurants, etc., are now? And the idea of, you know, we'll build this road, we'll build that. Where are we building it? Who's paying for it? Seeing all this from it's another fanciful addition to the wish list. And the cabinet member at county actually said, in regards to the slip road off the A12, there's just no way it would happen. So, you know, again, I think it's one of those things that somebody has just thought up and come up with without actually thinking it through. We've got a very good leisure facility here, which does need to be looked at in terms of how it can be developed going forward. And certainly we were having some very productive conversations with the management and with the trust here at the Brentwood Leisure Trust to talk about how that could happen. But I really don't think it's helpful. Council making, you know, some stark statement in the press, as we saw, about the future of a site without really talking locally to those people who are involved, not only in running this centre, but as you rightfully said at the beginning, those people that live in and around. If you live around a town centre, you know, there has to be a certain expectation that you will obviously have to contend with some of the inevitable impact of living so close to a town centre. People who live out here have gone for a more rural approach to life, to suddenly be inundated with, you know, a Bas Vegas in Brentwood. Not good news.
Well, yeah, it would have, but I mean, the high streets are a very funny situation now anyway, purely because of the internet is taking hold of everybody's life more and more and more as years go on. And you're getting more people buy off of the internet. I mean, 90% of the things that I buy is delivered to my door from the internet. It's so handy. You can just surf. You can get the cheapest price. You don't have to walk around the shops. I don't particularly like shopping at the best of times, as most men don't. All our food comes off of the internet now. I mean, everything. How do you think Brentwood High Street is going to fare in the long run anyway because of that?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you're right, the changing habits of people who, you know, the consumer, we all now buy to one extent or another off of the internet. And I think that the need to go to your high street has changed to what it would have been, say, 10 years ago. But I don't think that has to be a negative. I think it's about planning for what you want your high street to be. And if people see it more as a pastime, an experience, call it what you will, where they will go and have a coffee with a friend or have a look at some of the small independent shops that have got something a bit different to offer, then I think, you know, Brentwood in that regard could do very well. What I did find interesting, and I'm probably about 8-9 months now, having a conversation with somebody from one of the big retailers, I'll leave their name out, but one of the big retailers who do have a store in Brentwood. And what they were saying is that although they have a store, it's a small store compared to a national chain, compared to what they would have in other areas. But what they're actually seeing is that people would go to, say, Lakeside or Bluewater and have a look round and come back, and actually, if they don't have their size or they want something that isn't stocked there, they will order it in, and they see a lot of people from this area go into their store in Brentwood to pick it up. Shopping.
Very clever twist.
But they're coming in to pick it up.
Very, very, very clever.
And obviously, if you can get the people to, if they're coming in anyway, if you can get them to stay a bit longer and enjoy a look here, like I say, in the independent store, or go and have a coffee or whatever, their initial reason for coming into the high street actually has a really positive knock-on effect around, you know, helping some of the other businesses. So I think it's about, yes, being realistic. You know, of course, the internet, it's all on our phones.
Yeah, that's right.
It's there, literally.
It's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, there's only one way it's going. So it's about embracing that and seeing how we can use that to the benefit of the local shops.
My biggest was a leisure area put together. Is that you'd have a high street that just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. Mm-hmm. Because, there's only a certain amount of things you can't get on the internet. A haircut, for example. Well, some people can. But I've just sent my hair away, love. It'll be back next Wednesday, all right?
A virtual haircut.
Yeah. Food and drink. And that's, you know, that's getting towards the end of the line now, isn't it, really? So because of the internet anyway, I can see most high streets going into cafes, bars, nightclubs and hairdressers. And if you were to take that out of the high street and put it in a leisure area, the high street would end up be full. That's almost about it. And there's no way more than one or two hairdressers can substantiate the rest of the people in Brentwood. So I'm very cautious. For that reason alone, I would be very cautious about a leisure area being set up in Brentwood.
And you don't want to pull people out of the town centre. I mean, coming back to the William Hunter Way development, and I'm going back right back now to when this was first mooted and when the scheme was initially passed, which was, when was it, 2007, I think it was. It was before I was leader. And one of the main driving points around that was to help rejuvenate the high street. Because, forget for the moment, which, you know, I know some people like, some people don't, but the fact that there would have been an anchor store there, which would have been a proper household name of a size, the fact that there would be a cinema and other retail outlets so close to the high street, the drive behind that was that it would be more of a magnet to get people into the town centre. And if you're running over the road to use a Marks and Spencer, say, you know, a household name, if you're in the town already, then again that has the positive impact that whilst you're there you might go and look in one of the small independents. And it is about having that mixture, because they all need each other.
Yeah, they do. They do need each other.
People love going and looking at to see what the independents have to offer, because it's normally unique and something a bit different, and maybe might have been produced locally, etc. But also, we're all very familiar with Marks. We know it's a brand that people know, and people will go in and, you know, through habit, desire, call it what you will. But the impact across the divide is significant. And I think, you know, if we can get to the point where we have a town centre that is healthy and has something to offer more people, then that will be good in the long run for Brentwood.
Well, Louise, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon and talking to us. It's been a fantastic, fantastic. Oh, it's an hour now. We've been talking for an hour.
So it is.
Oh, my word. And you come in again whenever you want, whenever anything's going on, you talk to Paul, come in, you sit and talk to us again. It's always
Lovely.
A pleasure to speak to
Thank
you.
Thank you very much.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.